I want you to look back at chapter 8 of Deuteronomy and verse 2 for our text. The word Deuteronomy means the second telling, and it's a rehearsal of Moses of all the events of their deliverance. And in chapter 8, verse 2, it says, "Thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble thee and to prove thee, to know what was in thine heart, whether thou wouldst keep his commandments or not." The long journey of Israel from the shores of the Red Sea, where we left them last week, to the land of Canaan presents a continued chain of abundant miracles. Miracles that were done by God to preserve and protect the nation of his chosen people. We read back there in Deuteronomy 29, they walked for 40 years and still had the same shoes on. They had clothes on for 40 years and they were the same clothes. There's miracles involved in all that. He protected this nation of his chosen people from its beginning to its end, and this 40-year journey shows these bitter and complaining people being constantly refreshed by God's miraculous provision. Every time I read the Old Testament and I read about the children of Israel, I'm just absolutely amazed at the mercy of God. I'd have opened the earth up and swallowed them all if it had been me. But God deals with them in mercy and kindness and providence. And in that renewed commission, God promises that he will do miracles for his people. Miracles that the earth had never seen. And I'll tell you, God's still on the throne. And he'll still do miracles in your life. He may not open the Kentucky River and let you walk across. He may not send hamburgers flying through the air. But if you needed him to, he would. Throughout the Old Testament history, God continually reminds them of his blessings. In Micah chapter 7, verse 15, it says, "According to the days of thy coming out of the land of Egypt will I show unto him marvelous things." I want to bring you a message tonight, if the Lord help me, that I have titled Some Miracles in Israel's Journey. Some Miracles in Israel's Journey. The first thing that I want us to see here is that God transports an entire nation to their new homeland. And when they went into Egypt, back in the days of Jacob, they had 75 people. 450 years have gone by, and now they leave Egypt, and they've got over 2 million people. I wonder if you ever thought about what a task it would be to care for 2 million people. One of my favorite Christians of all time was a man named George Mueller. George Mueller had an orphanage in London, England, and he operated completely by faith. There were a number of times when the ladies and the took care of the children would come to his office and they would say, "Brother Mueller, we have no food for the children." And he would tell them, "You all fix their bowls and their spoons and put them at the table and I'll start praying. And God will send something." And it was amazing, the stories he told. How somebody would knock on the door and they'd have a basket of bread, or they'd have a bushel of oatmeal or whatever. So they'd feed those children. And he did that for years. But this move from one land to another is only done by God's wise and generous provision. Now, you ladies, when you go to the grocery store, you figure out how many you got to feed. Most of you that have your children are grown now, you're glad to get rid of them. For one reason, you don't have to buy so much at the grocery store. All you got to do is feed your husband. You can give him some potato chips and a bologna sandwich. And then, and that'll get him by. But you know, you stop and think about back years ago when people had 8 or 10 children and they didn't have much money. And they went to the store and they had to make them a list. They had to figure out what they could buy. We only got $3.12. What can we buy for that to feed these children? Well, how'd you like to have a grocery list for $2.7 million? That's a little bit less than the population of the entire state of Kentucky. We have about 3.3, I think, million people in the state of Kentucky. How'd you like to fix supper for the whole state of Kentucky? I'll tell you what, you better get 2 baskets when you go in the Kroger store because I don't think one will hold it. God carried them like they were on eagle's wings throughout this journey. Exodus 19:4 says, "You have seen what I did unto the Egyptians and how I bare you in the eagle's wings and brought you unto myself." God said, "I can move the world with an eagle. I'll carry you." And during the first 38 years, this whole generation of people that came out of Egypt died. Joshua and Caleb were the only two. When they sent the spies over into the land and they came back and they all wanted to stay where they were, go back to Egypt, only Joshua and Caleb wanted to stay there and do what God wanted them to do. And so he said, "Well, the rest of you will just wander around here till you die." And they wandered and they died. And they buried them out there in the desert. But they had children and grandchildren. And now they still have about 2.5 million people. And in Deuteronomy 2:14, it says, "The space in which we came from Kadesh Barnea until we were come over the brook Zered was 38 years until all the generations of the men of war were wasted out from among the host, as the Lord sware unto them." And these were people that were brave. You got to be brave to go wander around in the desert. They were people that had courage. They had strength. And they had some quality of life. But God gave every bit of it to them. Every bit of it. He appointed Joshua to lead them across the Jordan and to take the promised land. He told Moses, said, "You're not going in the promised land." Moses disobeyed God, got mad at the people, struck the rock twice. God said, "You're not going in the land." And he took him up on the mountain. He showed him the land. His heart was excited and he died there and God buried him. But Numbers contains the account of the numbering of Israel. They numbered the people twice. First time they did it was after they'd been out of Egypt. They'd come a little ways out in the desert, about the second year that they'd been out in the wilderness, and they numbered all the people. God didn't tell them to do that. They just decided they'd do that. They decided they'd figure out how many people they had to feed. God already knew how many they had to feed, all of them. The second numbering took place when they got to the end of their wilderness journeys, just before they went across the Jordan. And the story between those two numberings abounds with evidences of God's help. It just amazes me. You read this and it sounds like a fairy tale. The total number of men that were over 20 and that were equipped to fight was about 600,000. So they had 600,000 men, and one of the things that happened during the years that they'd been wandering in the wilderness was the old men who had been slaves in Egypt, they'd all died. And these young men had grown up and they taught them how to fight. They taught them how to hunt. They taught them how to do some things for themselves. But I don't know if you've ever been in the desert, and I have been, and I can tell you there ain't a whole lot to hunt out there. They still needed God. All the rest of the original numbering died in the wilderness journey. Numbers also abounds with some powerful displays of God's justice. You know, judgment against sin is against God's people as well as their enemies. One of the things the Jews got messed up in their head was they thought, we're God's people, we can do what we want to. God will take care of our enemies. He'll take care of our opposition. But they thought they could do whatever they want to and escape. But God proved to them over and over and over again they could not do that. The earth served as not only their graves, but their executioner. One time some people murmured against Moses, God just opened the earth up and swallowed the whole families. Closed the earth back up. This book displays the faithfulness of God to fulfill his promises. I'm just amazed that God is pleased to be so gracious to us as he is. God had promised Abraham that his seed would be as the stars of heaven. I'm sure when that 75 went down into Egypt back in the days of Jacob, they wondered if that's ever going to come to pass. Hundreds of years had gone by and there's still just 75 of them. But now there's 2.5 million. It seems like a huge mass of people. At the end of the journey, there were a little bit less than there was at the beginning. When they crossed the Red Sea, there was about 607,000. Now there's 601,000. God provides miracles to provide for their needs. Can you imagine the requirements to care for over 2 million people? Stop, think about that. How much food would it take? You think every grocery store in this town could supply one meal? I doubt it. Now, if they didn't eat anything but soup, beans, and cornbread, it might. God gave them food. He gave them water. He gave them clothing to wear. Their clothing didn't wear out. But I can guarantee you, children grow. And what they wore when they were 5 or 6 years old, they're not going to wear when they're 40. God provided for that. Those miracles typify God's complete provision for his elect. God will give his elect everything they need. They won't give you everything you want. Because most of the things we want are for satisfaction of our own lust, our own appeals, our own flesh, and we don't need them. They're not good for us. God gave them everything they needed, and he'll give you everything you need. God provided guidance. I remember the first time I went to Jordan. Plane landed at the northern end of Jordan, and it was getting dark, and they took us to a hotel, and we had supper, and went to bed, and got up the next morning, got on a bus, and rode all day long until 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night. and there was nothing but sand as far as you could see in every direction. Every direction. Now, I tell you, you can sit out there in the middle of that sand and say, well, I'll take care of myself if you want to, but you're foolish. He gave him guidance. He gave him shelter. They were Bedouin people. They lived in tents. He gave them food. He gave them bread. I like bread. He gave them quail. I don't know if I ever ate any quail. They tell me it's good. He gave them good water. Water that came out of a rock. Always amazed me. That rock just moves wherever they went, that rock went. They had water. He supported this huge nation in their wilderness journey. His providence was continuous. Do you realize how many people in the world haven't had a bite of food today? We live in a country where there's so much that we don't appreciate it. There are millions and billions of people in the world we live in today that go 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, maybe more without food. He provided it continuously and he provided it timely. There are times you don't need food. There are times it's dangerous for you to have food. His provision was often supplied in a miraculous way. They said, we want to go back to Egypt. They got onions and cucumbers and garlic and stuff there. We can go back there and eat that stuff. There's nothing to eat out here. And so Moses prayed for the people, and God said, told Moses, said, in the morning, when you get up, everybody go out and get you a couple of pecks of manna. What's manna? It's just white material, wafer-like. You take it and grind it in your pots, and you make bread out of it. Well, that was pretty good. Angel's food. But like most people, they couldn't be satisfied with it very long. They began to complain, we're tired of this bread. Don't you have anything but bread? We could have stayed in Egypt, make cucumbers and garlic and leeks. We just got bread out here. They said, okay. And told Moses, said tomorrow morning, said they'll have quails. They'll fly around just where you can reach out and grab you some. And they ate quails till it ran out their noses. God provided what they needed. These people were in the wilderness. There were no grocery stores, no McDonald's. They were in the wilderness, but they were headed for God's promised land, the land he told Abraham about back in Ur of the Chaldees. There was no carnal explanation for the supply of resources that God gave them. I just can't imagine that. Wake up in the morning, time to eat breakfast. Well, I haven't been to the store for 3 months. Wonder if there's anything here to eat. You open the refrigerator, there's eggs in there, ham. Where'd that come from? Well, I was cooking and eating. At night, there's a pot of soup in there. Where'd it come from? I don't know, but I'm going to eat it. God fed all those people for 40 years. There's no explanation for it. He just did it. Now, God had designed a particular layout for this camp to move in, so they didn't all get mixed up together. He gave instructions on how they were fit together, and he gave them orders. It's like a general gives orders to an army. To the east of the camp God settled Judah and Issachar and Zebulun. To the south of the camp, he arranged Reuben and Simeon and Gad. To the west, there was Ephraim and Manasseh and Benjamin. And to the north, there was Dan and Asher and Naphtali. The Levites and the tabernacles were in the middle of the camp. The tabernacle was there so that everybody, when they wanted to worship or they wanted to make an offering, they could get to it. The same effort for everybody. Sadly, and it is sad, this journey was also a time of apostasy. A time when they fell away. Hold your finger there if you want to turn back with me, or I'll read it to you. In Ezekiel chapter 20, verse 13. Ezekiel 20, verse 13. But the house of Israel rebelled against me in the wilderness. They walked not in my statutes, and they despised my judgments, which of a man do, he shall even live in them. In my Sabbaths they greatly polluted. Then I said I would pour out my fury upon them in the wilderness to consume them, but I wrought for my name's sake, that it should not be polluted before the heathen in whose sight I brought them out. Yet also I lifted up my hand unto them in the wilderness, that I would not bring them into the land which I had given them, flowing with milk and honey, which is the glory of all lands. God promised his people, I'll take care of you. But they wouldn't listen. Their clothing endured through the years of pilgrimage. I'm like a lot of old men, and I guess older ladies are the same way. You end up with more clothes you know what to do with. But I can remember a time in my life when I didn't have two shirts to put on. And I don't know where clothes came from, but God always provided them. And these people have been wandering around in the desert for 40 years. There's not a Sears store anywhere around. No Big Lots, no Walmarts, no Goodwills. But they're not naked. God made their clothes last. He supplied their needs, sometimes by ordinary means and sometimes by miraculous means. They had cattle and sheep and goats and stuff, and they could use them. But they couldn't destroy them all. They wouldn't have any. And when they hungered, God provided for them manna and quails. Now bread's awful good sounding to me, and the quails sound okay if somebody else would cook them. I don't think I'd be very good at cooking them. When they were thirsty, God made a fountain out of a rock. The Hebrew writers recorded God's blessings in their history. Garments grew or shrunk to fit properly on these individuals. His design is suitable for their need and for the blessing of his people. I see children on television. I don't know if you see them over in Syria and Iran, Iraq, stuff like that. They got little T-shirts on, shorts and stuff like that. They don't get them over there. We send them over there. Can you imagine what it means to a child over there to get a new T-shirt? God's design met the needs of his people. He fed them in a miraculous way with an adequate supply. If they tried to keep the manna till the next day, it was spoil. They tried to keep the quail till the next day, it was spoil. Every day. Now, on the day before the Sabbath, they had to get twice as much as they normally did. and it would last for 2 days. He led them in a miraculous manner. He taught them the art of being a seamstress, not only to fix their clothes and make new clothes if they needed them, but also to prepare them for building the tabernacle. When they got out in the middle of the desert, God was going to have them build a tabernacle. A tabernacle was not a small tent. Was the size of this building. He taught them how to prepare the skins to cover the exterior of that tabernacle. They stitched them together. They fit perfectly. It just, from the outside, the tabernacle was not a beautiful thing. It was just old animal hides. But the inside, it was majestic. They were provided the garments and shoes as they needed them for the journey, and God protected and preserved their health all through this trip. The people walked for many miles, but they didn't faint. Isaiah 40:29 says, "He giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no might, he increases strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall, but they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint." And then their journey was a tale of God's tenderness and God's love. I tell you, Moses got so aggravated at them, he shot them, I think. And I'm not going to be critical of Moses, because if it had been me, I would have shot him. But God's historical account records his supply and his total provision of their needs. There wasn't a single pilgrim. 2.5 million people or so that lacked anything they really needed. This wilderness wandering was part of God's discipline to teach them. Teach them not to depend on themselves, but to teach them to trust Him as a supplier of all they needed. But they wandered. And their wanderings were an exercise of free will and dullness, and they always got them in trouble. Their journey to Canaan would have been very short, probably 3 weeks or so, a month at the most, if they'd gone straight across to Canaan. It took them about a month to walk there. But because of their disobedience and their rebellion, God let them wander in the wilderness for 40 years. You see, God can teach you a lesson. In fact, God will teach you lessons. This simple journey took almost 40 years. Every mile and every day, God was working miracles. Water kept running out of that rock. Manna kept coming out of the sky. Quails kept flying around. God's patience and power are unlimited and available to His people. Of all the things in my life I think I've been a failure at, I think I've been a failure as a parent more than anything else. I'd get so aggravated at my boys sometimes, I just wanted to brain them. In fact, I've tried a couple of times. And I read in the Bible how God had such patience with these Hebrew children, and He was so kind to them, and He did miracles to provide their needs, and He forgave them and showed them mercy. He kept Moses in control by discipline and judgment. Every time Moses would think, "I got this thing under control, got it all wrapped up," he'd stir up somebody else. they'd start another trouble. No matter how long God lets you journey, don't ever forget that. No matter how long, He'll always be there. I read the other day, I was reading the paper some day, the other day about some fellow that was 116 years old. And they were interviewing him, and he mentioned somehow, exactly his word, but he said, basically, God's taken care of me all these years. I asked him, how long do you think you're going to live? He said, as long as God wants me to. Right answer. There were so many serious events in their journey. This wasn't a trip on I-75. They were traveling through the wilderness. God's type and God's figures were intended for their teaching and for our admonition. You read their experience and you'll get lessons out of it that'll bless you. Paul quotes several of these when he warned the Corinthians. Oh, friend, turn back with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Let's read verse 1. He says, moreover, brethren, I would not that you should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea and were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea and did all eat the same spiritual meat and did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with many of them, God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now these things were our examples, to the intent we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. Neither be ye idolaters, as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ, if some of them also tempted and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed of the destroyer. Now all these things happened unto them for examples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. The Lord would have us to know that He will not allow His people to continue to wander in darkness and unbelief. But the Lord gave miracles to prepare their hearts for the conflict that was coming. And one more thing I want you to see here is God's miracles in this journey were of a threefold nature. There were miracles in God's plan to preserve the nation. He told Abraham, I'm going to build a nation. A messianic nation was devised to pave the way for a Messiah. You must understand this. If you understand this, you can understand the rest of the Bible. God has a purpose in everything He does. And that purpose is to send His Son to be the Redeemer of His people, and in His own due time to send the Holy Spirit to bring those people to trust Christ. God would not have them to ever forget His promise of a Savior. He told Adam and Eve as soon as they sinned, when He threw them out of the garden. He provided because it was necessary to maintain God's nation. that these were miracles that God sent to build the nation. It was a nation rooted in Egyptian idolatry with regard to religion. These people had been raised up for 450 years around idolaters. There was no tabernacle in the slave quarters. There were no sacrifices offered in the slave quarters. They were slaves. The only religion they heard about, except what their fathers told them, was the religion of the Egyptians. He encouraged them to walk continually with faith in Jehovah. He's one true God. His people need no other. There were miracles in their effects that touched other nations, touched their enemies. God showed his majesty repeatedly to the Canaanites. The story of them conquering the land is an amazing story. This destination of the Hebrews was settled. They were headed home. They were going to the land that God had provided for them. The declaration of God's miracles was known by everybody around them. Everywhere they'd go, they didn't pay any attention to God's miracles. But you read the Old Testament, everybody they came in contact with, everybody that wanted to fight with him, everybody that was in standing against them, they knew about God. Rahab told those spies, "We know about God. We know he's going to destroy this city. Show mercy." The majesty of God wrecked the morale of all the nations that were to be ousted from the promised land. I love those stories. Some of the Canaanites wouldn't leave. They were too fierce. Israel couldn't defeat them. They began to pray. God's response was, "This is no problem." He just turned hornets loose on them. I don't know if you've ever been chased by a hornet, but they will make you move. They will make you go where you don't want to go. And they left. The transportation of the nation was God's miraculous working of his purpose. His provision was adequate to meet all their needs. The apostasy of all those who rebelled against God is embarrassing. And it's shameful. And it still is. God dealt with them in loving care. He dealt with them in mercy. He dealt with them in discipline. And his miracles are always in the scope of his plan and his provision. You see, those 2.5 million people out there in the desert, if they were wise, they wondered every day, "Are we going to get there?" But those who trusted God knew that God's work always gets done. "And thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble thee and to prove thee, to know what was in thine heart, whether thou would keep his commandments or not." Amen.